Ancient Faith Radio presents another Ancient Faith commentary. Today's commentary entitled Harbinger of Storm or Passage to Calm, a commentary on the Great and Holy Council being held in Crete. Today's commentary is offered by Archpriest Patrick B. O'Grady, pastor of St. Peter the Apostle Antiochian Orthodox Church in Pomona, California, and associate fellow of the Antiochian Orthodox Institute in La Verne, California. Here's Father Patrick.
Harbinger of storm or passage to calm. When we had sailed slowly many days and arrived with difficulty off Cnidus, the wind not permitting us to proceed, we sailed under the shelter of Crete. Acts 27:7. The so-called Pan-Orthodox Synod has just convened on the island of Crete. This has been promoted with the epithet Holy and Great, something traditionally reserved for fully ecumenical synods. Despite the hopes, this is now proving to be essentially only a partial Orthodox synod. The primatial hierarchs of some of the local churches have arrived and have met. Others are staying home, the wind not permitting them to proceed to a fully pan-Orthodox synod. Whether this synod will be holy and great is not up to the promoters to say ahead of time, but rather in the proof of its actions and substance as received by the Church in her Catholic fullness, clergy and laity. So we can assuredly say now that we are talking about a partial Orthodox synod. Where do matters stand on the eve of the Synod of Primates and their select episcopal entourages? As of this writing, four venerable local churches have announced their non-attendance. On principle, Bulgaria, Georgia, Antioch, and Russia, in the order of the time of their announcement not to attend. The Holy Synod of the Church of Serbia had also decided not to attend, but in the end, they reversed themselves with reservations on conditions which could lead to a walkout. The Church of Russia is expressing its strong conviction that no synod can be called pan-Orthodox unless every church is present and whose grievances are heard and acted upon. Patriarch Kirill, via formal letter, June 17th, to the Synaxis, now in Crete, he says, "The absence of the Church of Antioch's consent to convene the council means that we have not reached pan-Orthodox consensus. We cannot ignore the voices of the Georgian, Serbian, and Bulgarian churches either, who have spoken for a postponement of the council to a later date. Surely this succinctly states the matter with clarity." Now the press, along with many commentators of Protestant, Roman Catholic, and not even a few nominally Orthodox background, have been touting this Cretan synod as the first one to convene since the Seventh Ecumenical in the year AD 787. This claim in itself stems from ignorance about Orthodox Church history. However, such claims are enervating and enthusiastic and must be often repeated. They promise with high hopes the ultimate fulfillment of the grand unification of all Christendom long desired and dreamed of, especially since the Faith and Order movement and the establishment of the World Council of Churches in 1948. This reasserted hope has become further widespread with the Roman Catholic Church's embrace of ecumenism. This embrace is all the more especially underscored since the elevation of Pope Francis a few years ago and the several encounters between him and various Orthodox primates, chiefly publicized are those with Patriarch of Constantinople Bartholomew and Patriarch of Russia Kirill. But the reality concerning such synods is not so striking. How often have Orthodox synods met? When was the last one? Are the winds which are blowing now harbingers of a coming ecclesiastical storm or of the promise of safe harbor in fair haven? As a member of the Permanent Synod of the Russian Orthodox Church, Metropolitan Hilarion said in an interview posted on RT, dated June 14th, that if this synod convened as less than a fully attended synod by all the churches, it would prove to be an obstacle to Orthodox unity rather than a contribution to unity. We have seen it before. The last named pan-Orthodox gathering, then called a Congress, Synedrion, held in 1923, with the churches of Constantinople, of course, and Serbia, Cyprus, Greece, and Romania present in one way or another, was also a partial Orthodox synod. Quite unfortunately for the Orthodox Church as a whole, the 1923 Congress, the last synod at this level to take place before that which is now convening in Crete, did significant damage to Orthodox unity. The aftermath remains with us today. Ecumenistic syncretism with heterodox notions about man and the Church, the upsetting of the unified calendar between the Paschalion and the Menologion, the fostering of division and dissent within many of the local churches, and chief among all, an increase in the tendency toward political manipulation of our hierarchs. Now, some of the decrees passed in 1923 were not implemented, since the participants knew that they lacked Catholic fullness. For example, they left open the question regarding remarriage of widowed presbyters. At that time, there was still an awareness that, absent the Church of Russia, then in the first stages of her martyrdom, the Church of Antioch, and many others, no profound actions could be taken. These would look to another day. It is well known that in 1961, the preparations for convening a pan-Orthodox synod started to move ahead. Just the other day, Metropolitan Euthyphros of Naupactos and St. Blasius, in his message given before his departure from his metropolis of Naupactos to Crete, and published through his metropolis, parimbasis.gr, listed many pan and indeed partial, or even may I say merely local Orthodox synods down through the centuries, in order to put the aforementioned perceptual error to rights regarding the periodic occurrence of synods. Some of these synods, even some of the local ones, possess universal acclaim. Those of the years 879 to 80, 1341 to 68, 1484, 1590, 1756, 1848, 1872, and of course 1923. That amounts to more in number than the number of the ecumenical synods of the first millennium. Of these synods of the second millennium, certainly the 1923 synod has its faults as mentioned above, I dare say, consisting of a crosswind contrary in the journey toward expressing Orthodox Catholic oneness. The other synods, cited by their years that I just mentioned, ruled on many issues, some of very great substance, such as the condemnation of the filioque, the doctrine of created grace, Barlaamism, Protestant errors, and lately in the 19th century synod, ethnic tribalism, or ethnophilitism as they say in Greek, as a basis for the identity of the local church. These condemnations were favorable winds for the Ark of Christ and a storm to the enemy of our souls. Now, as we consider the obstacles to full attendance at this present Cretan synod, we could point to the contents in the more controversial of the six working documents. Those more controversial documents include the one on the diaspora and the one on relations with other Christians. Well, I'm not going to examine these now. Many others have done a laudable job on that front. I mentioned in passing only that the Church of Bulgaria decided not to attend because of profound pessimism regarding the likelihood of amending the document on ecumenism, which of course they did not like. Antioch, the most ancient of all the churches, decided not to attend on basic principle, chiefly stemming from the rejection of the principle of unity raised in the last preconciliar session held in January 2016 in Chambézy. This was explained in point one of the statement issued by the Holy Synod of Antioch saying why they could not be present. This principle of unanimity was set forth by Patriarch of Constantinople Athenagoras in the first preconciliar session held in Rhodes in 1961, a very nice principle. That is, that no actions could be taken unless every single church signed on to that. There would be no majority votes. It would be absolute unanimity. So there is nothing new or surprising in this feature of Antioch's statement. It must be reasserted at this point that Antioch did not sign the agreement to go ahead in January. So it's inaccurate to say that Antioch is ruining the synod at the last minute. Antioch's statement and its position has been steadfast, on principle, and clear for a half a year now. Unanimity is the bond of charity, without which no one can say it seemed good to the Holy Spirit and to us. Now I come to the heart of my theme and the conclusion. Foundational principles of ecclesiology are being violated. This constitutes the heart of the imminent failure and shame of this partial synod now convening. The violation of such principles lies behind the ever-stiffening wind which is blowing contrary to any success or development in Orthodox unity. So what are these principles? First and foremost, the commandment to love. "This is my commandment, that ye love one another," said our Master. When fraternal charity suffers between churches, it is the responsibility of the others to labor for a redress of differences and the crafting of solutions to problems. The Church of Antioch has suffered violation of its ancient canonical territory by the Church of Jerusalem in the Emirate of Qatar. This is a known fact. The canonical solution to this issue was passed during the sessions of the Fourth Ecumenical Synod. That's in the year 451. For all time, as written in the decree, that Arabia belong to Antioch and Jerusalem care for Tertia Palestina. This is modern-day Transjordan, de facto the country of Jordan. Jerusalem to date has offered no canonical basis for its interference in the Gulf region, whereas Antioch has had a metropolitan overseeing this area out of Baghdad. All timely and patient attempts by the Patriarch of Antioch to solve this problem and to bring Jerusalem to account have failed. Indeed, Antioch's repeated appeals to the Patriarch of Constantinople to lend a hand in settling this issue have been ignored. Late in time, the Patriarch of Constantinople offered to broker a settlement after the synod. Antioch rightly rejected this, as it would involve hypocrisy. How can the hierarchs can celebrate the liturgy on Pentecost before such a settlement is found? Antioch has broken communion with Jerusalem over this matter of profound principle. The synod cannot call itself in any way pan-Orthodox until this matter is settled. 2. The ancient canons regarding the presbyia, or primacy of honor, of the heads of churches have received far too much attention at the expense of the more practical reality of bishops over worshiping communities. This principle is violated by the promotion of the Patriarch of Constantinople as first without equals, primus sine paribus. This is the language of papism, something abhorrent to Orthodox ecclesiology and practical church ethics. The bishops, no matter the title, ought to represent functioning communities of believers over which they preside as pastors. Titles are adornments to the shepherd, not his identity as a pastor of his rational sheep. 3. Synods professing any degree of ecumenicity, not in the ancient sense of coterminous with the Roman Empire down to its demise, but rather in the wider modern sense of universality, have not limited the attendance of any Orthodox territorial bishop. Episcopatum solidum est, as Cyprian of Carthage said. That is to say, the episcopate is one. Therefore, any hierarch, no matter the honorific, possesses the charism of Catholic and apostolic grace. This datum is suppressed because of the preoccupation with primacy and honors. Connected with this is the erroneous procedure of limiting votes of one per local church, effectively preempting the other bishops in their Christ-given responsibility to rightly set forth the word of truth. All of the bishops who preside over communities, excluding, of course, auxiliary or helping bishops who do not have a direct flock, all these ruling bishops have a say in conciliarity and ought to be free to speak. 4. Finally, on principle, the Cretan Synod cannot succeed because the documents are rife with language drawn from secular or at best heterodox Christian conceptions of the construct of mankind, confusion of nature and person, the oneness of the church in favor of the branch theory, the latitudinarian child of Anglicanism, and the facile adoption of civil rights language without a sufficient grounding in the patristic tradition. May we faithful everywhere, patiently and with humility and prayer, perfect holiness in the fear of God. I hope my humble statement forms some small part of a constructive way forward for the good of our precious church. The Holy Church is beset with many temptations, trials, and assaults. But with God's help and mercy, we shall withstand them all until, passing by with difficulty, we come to a place called Fair Havens. Acts 27:8. Thank you for your kind attention.
And that was Father Patrick O'Grady, pastor of St. Peter the Apostle Antiochian Orthodox Church in Pomona, California, and associate fellow of the Antiochian Orthodox Institute in La Verne, California. This has been another presentation of Ancient Faith Radio.